When it comes to air quality, the bad news is that wildfires and air pollution have really degraded the quality of our air. But the good news is that we're all realizing that the quality of our air, and particularly the quality of our indoor air, is really darn important. I'm so excited to tell you about Puro Air because in 30 minutes, this device will remove allergens, dust, smoke, and gases from your room. It uses a stronger type of filter called a HEPA 14, and it filters pollutants at a microscopic level. I keep my Puro Air running upstairs where the bedrooms are all night. I love that it's quiet. Cleaner air just hits different, doesn't it? Check out everything Puro Air has to offer at getpuroair.com. That's GetPuroAir.com. One more time for the people in the back, getpuroair.com. Mother's Day is around the corner, and I have the best gift idea for you. Hold on to your hats. It's mylifeinabook.com. Every week, My Life in a Book will send your mom a question via email. They will compile all of your mom or the mom in your life's answers and create a legacy keepsake book. The book becomes something you and future generations can treasure forever. I gave both my mother and my mother-in-law My Life in a Book, and they've already started responding to the prompts. When my mother-in-law received her first prompt, she said, "Oh my goodness, what a thoughtful gift." And that's what we all want, right? We all want to give thoughtful gifts. So check out mylifeinabook.com and use code SUSTAINABLE at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day, mylifeinabook.com, and use code SUSTAINABLE for 10% off today. You're listening to episode 51 of the Sustainable Minimalist Podcast.
You are listening to the Sustainable Minimalist Podcast, a show about living simply and sustainably with your family. Here's your host, Stephanie Safarian.
Hi there, and welcome back. If you are at all interested in minimalism, chances are good you've come across today's guest before. And that's because I am talking with the Joshua Becker of Becoming Minimalist. He's on the show today to discuss minimalism as it applies to the holidays, especially about how to beat back, so to speak, all that holiday clutter that somehow manages to just sneak right into our homes unannounced and park itself in all those hiding places. We're also talking today about Joshua's new book, which is titled The Minimalist Home, and it is out now. Highlights of today's conversation can be found in this week's show notes, which you can find at mamaminimalist.com/051, mamaminimalist.com/051. Let's just get right into it. No more chit-chat. Enjoy the episode. Joshua, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. How are you?
Oh, I am wonderful. Thank you for hosting me. This is fantastic.
Yes, I must say this is quite an honor. I love everything you're doing in the minimalist movement. And for anybody who doesn't know you, which probably I doubt that's the case, but just in case, if there's anybody out there listening today who doesn't know who Joshua Becker is, why don't we start by you telling us all about yourself?
Sure. Well, there are actually are a whole lot of people who don't know who I am. So thanks for the chance to introduce myself. Joshua Becker, married 20 years, have two children, 16 and 12. I found minimalism 10 and a half years ago. Actually, it was my neighbor who introduced me to the idea, and the lifestyle. At the time, actually the weekend that I first heard about minimalism and was committed to making it a part of who I am, I started a website, becomingminimalist.com. Actually, back then it was becomingminimalist.wordpress.com. It was just on their free version. And I started the website as a online diary, a journal, where I could write about the process, what we are getting rid of, what we are keeping, what lessons we are learning along the way. It was just going to be my own little personal spot in the world online, but it continued to grow and grow. And so we now have over 1 million readers every single month. And I have been just full-time writing and speaking and introducing people to the idea of minimalism and trying to serve as my neighbor's role in my life to as many people as I possibly can by introducing them to the idea and the lifestyle.
You just came out with a new book, The Minimalist Home, and we will absolutely talk about the book in a little bit. But before we do that, I have more pressing questions, and it has to do with the season we are in, which is, of course, the holidays. I would love to talk to you about handling holiday clutter. It just kind of appears, doesn't it? I have no idea where it comes from. And as a minimalist, I like to think that I have it all under control, but there's something about the holiday clutter I need your help with.
Indeed. Indeed. Lots of people do. Lots of people do. I'll say this. We found one thing that was true. Yeah, we've made a lot of changes in how we handle the holidays. I found minimalism in May, actually over Memorial Day weekend. And so we began going through our home. And when Christmas came, it was about 6 months into the process of getting rid of most of the things out of our house. And so I was pretty worried going into my first holiday season about what it was going to mean and what it was going to look like. And we started making changes right then that very first year.
So what does a minimalist holiday look like at your house these days?
What we did was, think of decorations, for example. We like Christmas, and it's an important holiday for us. And I remember going into the basement and pulling out, I don't know, 3 or 4 boxes full of decorations of things that we would, you know, put all over the house. And my wife did it, and we set up our home in our typical holiday fashion that very first year. And it was after the holiday season that we decided to minimize our holiday decorations by simply saying, we are just going to keep one box of decorations. Rather than 3, let's just cut it down to 1. Let's just keep our absolute favorite decorations, the ones that mean the most to us. Maybe there's history in them or religious significance to them. And so we that's it. We just packed up one box to go back into the basement as opposed to 3. And I'm thinking back over the last 10 years, we've stayed pretty close to having just that one box. Our kids are older now, so I think there's another smaller box of their stuff that's been added to the mix. But that's how we decorate now. Our house is still Christmas themed, but it's much less than it was before, and every decoration has significant meaning to us, as opposed to before, where I don't know, stuff was on sale at Target or something, and so we had bought it and thought it would be cool for Christmas, and but in reality, it didn't mean all that much to us.
Mm. You mention in the new book about having a physical boundary, like 1 or 2 plastic bins as the maximum for the amount of holiday decorations you keep. I'm wondering if in your home, is there every year like a constant renegotiation of what goes into that physical boundary? Or is it very streamlined and very simple after 10 years of being a minimalist?
There is. So in my home, the only negotiation that takes place is within my wife's mind. I don't care a ton. You know, I don't pick, you know, which decorations go up and which ones we hold on to. But I'm sure for her there's always, you know, which ones am I going to keep this year and which ones am I going to get rid of? There are far less that come into our home now, but still kids are at school, so they come home with things and you know, loved ones give things that might be Christmas themed. And so I always think it's almost impossible to keep nothing from coming into your home over the course of the year or over the holiday. But as far as negotiation, it's all in her mind and in her decision process. But it's certainly much easier now than it would have been going from 3 to 1. But I'm a big physical boundary fan. I think that's very helpful in a lot of different spaces and a lot of different areas. And to me, you know, it forces questions of importance and what's really important and what's really worth keeping and what isn't.
Another concept you mentioned in the book was clutter cost. I'm wondering if you could explain that a little bit more.
Yeah, so I write in the book about, you know, there's a burden to the things that we have, and there's some benefit to the things that we have. And the question I think we need to be asking is, you know, do the possessions in my life bring more benefit to my life, or have they become a burden? Almost like a scale a little bit. Is it more of a burden or is it more of a benefit? And most people don't really stop to consider how much of a burden their possessions have become. If we're reaching people here who have embraced minimalism and are trying to apply it to their lives, that like they have become more noticing, they've become more observant of the burden that their possessions have become. And so I think then, you know, we start thinking about holiday decorations, even the holiday gifts that we give. And I think it's a valid, question. I don't think in the book, I mentioned specifically, you know, the cost of clutter in terms of holidays. But you raise a good point there and you ask a good question. Do the decorations that we have, you know, are they really adding to the holiday season, or are they distracting from the holiday season? Is the financial burden and the time burden and the space burden of carrying the decorations forward, or the gifts that we receive, or the gifts that we give, have they become far more of a burden to our life than a benefit? Good question.
I'm thinking in terms of my own house as we decorate for the holidays. You know, one physical barrier bin has somehow, we've only lived in this house for 3 years, but has somehow now become 4 bins. And of course, the more stuff you have to put out, that means more time. It's now taking an entire weekend to decorate the house. So thank you for the holiday decoration related motivation. I will totally be downsizing the 4 bins of decorations. But another part of holiday clutter, of course, comes in the form of gifts. I'm wondering, what would you say to families who just go over the top with, I don't want to say meaningless gifts, but gifts that aren't truly needed or loved? How would a family who's just been mindlessly giving get more incrementally mindful as they show their love through presents?
Sure. And then let me ask a clarifying question. Our immediate family, me, my wife, and my kids, or do you mean grandparents, aunts and uncles, brothers and sisters? You know, like, do you mean extended family or immediate family? Because we certainly have more control over the gifts that we give in our immediate family than we do extended family.
Let's start with the immediate family and then we'll extend out to the extended family slightly.
Okay. Yeah, good. Perfect. Yes. In our immediate family, we obviously have much more control. And what we have begun doing, actually, we started years and years ago, not 20 years ago, but since we found minimalism, is we give our kids 3 gifts, one thing they want, one thing they need, and then one experience to share with the family. And so need tends to be, I don't know, a clothing item or maybe a new sport that they're getting into as they grow and find new passions. And so there's always needs that we have. And so we give one gift and it would be like a nice gift. So I always think my son needs shirts to wear, but it doesn't have to be a Tom Brady jersey, you know? So we'd give him like a Tom Brady jersey, as his need, cause he obviously has to wear clothes. And then one thing they want. So, you know, if it's, my son's into video games, my daughter's into, she's been into doing some art stuff. So one thing they want, and then one experience to share with the family. So for the past several years, we've done a gift card to their favorite restaurant, enough to take out the whole family, and then they can decide whenever they use it over the course of the year. And we always do a big thing. I make them order and all sorts of stuff. But so that's what we've done, and I've found that you can control that pretty well. And you may be in a family where you usually give a lot of gifts to your children and you're worried, oh man, if I pull the rug out from underneath them, they're, you know, this is going to be the worst Christmas ever. And the, you know, this is just the culture that we built in our family and I can't change it, but you can, and you can still make it special and nice. And, just tell your kids that we're going to start doing something different. And, this is why we're doing it this way going forward. And they'll be just fine. Kids will enjoy Christmas regardless. So that's what we've done in the immediate family. The extended family, I think, raises some other issues and some other questions.
Like?
So grandparents, I think, are probably the big ones that I think of. I have taken the philosophy, first and foremost, that I believe gift giving is a love language. It is something that human beings have practiced for thousands of years to show love and respect and admiration. We give gifts. And so this is something that we do to express our love to others. And I don't want to take away that opportunity from my parents to show love to my children or to me. And so I don't think the answer is we don't want any gifts. I think the answer is thank you for giving gifts. Here are some gifts that we need. Here are some gifts that we want, perhaps consumables. So redirecting their gift-giving habits into something that would be more beneficial to us, which usually fall into, I think, three categories, needs over wants, actually four categories I think of, needs over wants, quality over quantity. So if you're going to spend $100, how about two nice gifts rather than 10 little plastic ones? Experiences over possessions, and consumables over non-consumables. Those are four ways that we can kind of direct their gift-giving habits into something that doesn't become burdensome clutter in our homes and in our lives. And in order to do that, we need to be good about giving gift lists. And we need to be on the ball, getting them out early, I think, to people with plenty of options in there so they know what you need or what your kids need, what they're getting into, what experiences your kids might appreciate, lessons or memberships or tickets, those types of things. And I find usually that the first year of this, grandparents don't care all that much and still get whatever they are going to give. And the second year, maybe not either, but you know, three, four years down the road of saying, no, like I'm being serious. These are the gifts that we would appreciate most. I think that they start to understand that you actually mean it and kind of latch onto it a little bit better.
Yes, I love all those suggestions, and specifically the one where you say redirect them by having a list of needs or like very specific wants at the ready. Don't wait for them to ask for it. Have it there so that they can be more easily redirected.
Yeah. Yeah. And you need to be more creative than money and gift cards, you know, because some people don't want to give money and don't want to give gift cards. They want to give something very specific. So I think that's helpful. One thing that I saw that I remember, if it's helpful to some people going into this holiday season, if they've, like I said, we found minimalism in May and we spent about 6 months going through the house. And when Christmas came, I was very worried. We just spent all this time getting rid of stuff and what was Christmas going to look like and how much was going to come in. And certainly my kids came home with more toys than I would have liked or would have gotten for them for themselves. But I did find, to my surprise, that the clutter felt less cluttery than previous years. And I think because I had gone through the toy room and we had minimized their toys they were 2 and 5 when we first found minimalism. We had minimized their toys to a level that there was almost like room to add new toys. And so Christmas wasn't, as previous years had been, clutter on top of an already cluttered toy room. It was clutter on top of a toy room that was manageable where it was. And so, you know, 3-4 months down the road, we were able to revisit the toy room again and say, okay, so which of the new toys that you got for Christmas are you using? What are you not using? What became a favorite toy? What didn't become a favorite toy? What old toys got replaced by new ones? And I just felt like we were in a much better position to even evaluate what the new toys were that came in that first year than we had been in previous years, if it's encouraging to anyone who's worried about going into their first Christmas.
Absolutely. It sounds as though your 6 months of minimizing created some breathing room in your home. So once Christmas did come around, it wasn't clutter on top of clutter. You had a little space to really be able to analyze it and make decisions.
Yeah. And yeah. Even going back to our previous conversation about, you know, new decorations that emerge and come in, if it's, you know, if you're already overwhelmed with clutter, then it's hard to evaluate what's best. But when you make those decisions and then next year, a few new things come in and you're like, all right, are these worth keeping or are they not worth keeping? Much easier to evaluate at that point for sure.
I'd love to do a complete pivot and talk about your new book, which just came out, The Minimalist Home. Now, this isn't your first book. So I'm wondering, why did you write this one?
Yeah. Good question. I have a couple self-published books, Simplify, which is really short, 30, 40 pages, Clutter-Free with Kids, which I self-published specifically for parents. My book that came out 2.5 years ago, The More of Less, was my first traditionally published book, I guess you could say, and it is by far the most in-depth conversation I've had about minimalism. I wrote it after 6 or 7 years of thinking about this stuff as opposed to 1 or 2 years. And so it's very good. It's very in-depth. It is very much, I wrote it specifically to introduce people to the idea of minimalism and the benefits of it and trying to change thought processes, trying to convince people to own less stuff. So it is very much the why of minimalism. But since then, I have noticed that there are people who want more than just why do I become a minimalist and are looking for specifically how do I do this and how do I apply this into my life? And so The Minimalist Home is the how-to of minimalism from a family perspective. And it goes through room by room, steps in each room, things to think about in each room, and begin implementing this lifestyle in your own specific space. I was pretty worried writing it, to be very honest with you. To be honest and transparent, I tend to shy away from very specifics. Here's what to get rid of. Here's what to keep. Here's what a minimalist does. Here's what a minimalist doesn't do. Because I don't like any of those conversations. I think minimalism is very different from one person to another, and one family to another, and one living situation to another, and one career to another, and one passion to another. It varies very significantly. But I think the minimalist home strikes a very good balance of that, and it can say, you know, here's what to think about when attacking this room. Here's a plan to go into each room. Here's some questions to ask about each room. And then here's the best step forward, making it work for your home and for your life. So you read the book. I hope you read that in there as you read it. But yes, that's the reason for the minimalist home.
I would absolutely agree with you. It's not preachy. It's not rigid. Every chapter, you're right, every chapter is kind of like another room in a home. Every chapter gives practical advice for anybody, wherever they are in the stage of their minimalist journey. So thank you for writing it. I can see how it would be hugely beneficial to many aspiring minimalists. But I do have an important question, or what I think is an important question, which is this. The book has the Becker method. There are an awful lot of decluttering methods out there. So I'm wondering, in your opinion and in your view, how is the Becker method different?
The Becker method is based on the steps that I took in my own life and in my own home. And it is based on, I have an online course that I help people go through this process in their home, and 25,000 people have gone through the course and implemented these principles in their home through it. And so it is based on what I have seen to be successful, not just in my own life, but repeated over and over and over again. And probably the most important principle, the most important thing that I believe to be true is that, number one, this is hard work. This is decluttering, minimizing your home. That this is hard work for a lot of people. It was hard work for me, and it takes time and effort, and it takes resolve, and it takes, there's a journey that we go on both internally and externally as we apply these principles. And so the method starts easy and gets harder. I've spoken on minimalism, I don't know, hundreds of times. Thousands is probably too many. Must be hundreds. Hundreds of times. And every time I talk about minimalism and owning less to people who have never considered it, minds always run to, yeah, but what about this? Like, how am I ever going to get rid of my books or my sentimental things or my yarn stash, or how am I ever going to get through my attic or my garage? And I always tell people, you don't start in the hardest place in your home. Like don't start with your kids' things. Don't start by attacking the attic or the basement, or you don't start by going through your books or your clothes if fashion is really important to you. Start easy. Start with the things that you know you can get rid of. Start in those spaces where you know you can have accomplishment and victory, and you can begin experiencing the benefits of owning less in those spaces, and then build up that muscle a little bit. And then when you eventually get to your book collection, you'll be like, okay, I've gone everywhere else in my home. I've accomplished everything else. Now I'm ready for this. How am I going to apply these principles to my books, or to my hobbies, or to whatever sentimental thing, you know, might be most difficult for you.
Mm. You touch on the importance of incrementalism. I had a good friend on the show a while back, Jen Pinero, and she said it's all about picking the low-lying fruit first, the stuff that's easy, and then you get the ladder to go up to the next level. I feel like that's what you're saying essentially, is you start easy, gain the confidence, and then go for the things that are out of reach currently.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think as we recognize the benefits, which is one of the important principles in the book, as we notice how our life is improving by owning less, we are more motivated and inspired to go grab the ladder and get more fruit down. Because we see, hey, this is great. I have more time and I have more money. I have more energy. I have more freedom. Living is a better example for my kids. I'm living a better life for the environment. I'm, you know, seeing all these benefits in my life to owning less. Where else can I do it? And where else can I apply it? And where is my ladder so I can go get some of that harder fruit and enjoy even more of these benefits along the way?
Hmm. Where can listeners purchase your book?
It is available everywhere. Release December 18th, and certainly can be ordered online. It's available in e-formats, available as an audiobook, and should be in bookstores as well.
Joshua, thank you so much for coming on. Remind listeners one more time where you can be found online.
Sure. BecomingMinimalist.com is the home base for everything I do, and people can find me there.
Thank you again. This was an enlightening conversation.
It is my pleasure. Okay. Thank you for having me.
I so hope you enjoyed that interview with Joshua Becker of Becoming Minimalist. Check out this week's show notes at mamaminimalist.com/051. And if you haven't rated the show yet, but you are receiving enjoyment and benefit, maybe this is the week that you rate the Sustainable Minimalist podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And thank you. Now, on next week's show, we are talking with Julia Mooney. She is the teacher who has vowed to wear the same gray dress to work for the first 100 days of school in efforts of calling attention to the unsustainable and unethical practices of the fast fashion industry. Maybe if you follow me on Facebook, you saw I posted an article on her from USA Today. Since posting that article, she has been a guest on Good Morning America. She's been interviewed by the BBC. She's really just making the rounds. She's gaining a lot of attention from this little experiment. So we're talking to Julia Mooney next week, and I will see you then. Take care.